Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. Today is a special Mother's Day broadcast. My guest for this morning is author Annie Burnside. Annie and I will be discussing about her multi-award-winning book titled Soul to Soul Parenting. It is a guide to raising a spiritually conscious family. Good morning, Annie. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm just great, Johnny. Thanks so much, and what an honor to be here this week before Mother's Day as we celebrate mamas around the world. So thank you.
I'm very excited to have you on. It's fascinating to read your book. It teaches so much about a lot of things, morals, love, compassion, connectedness. In short, it teaches about awesomeness. So congratulations.
Thank you. It's my fourth baby.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
I would love to. Thank you. Always a deep, reflective kind of child. Some of you listeners may have a child like that in your own family. I'd say a natural beer, just kind of not needing to be doing something all the time. So perhaps this spiritual work, which I really think is just an opening of perspective and a widening of the heart, deepening of the heart through your own interior, came fairly naturally to me. I always would be the type to ask my parents those difficult questions right before I went to sleep, why are there children starving around the world, those type of things are kind of hard to answer for parents. But anyway, when I was 19, my parents went through a difficult divorce. Mm-hmm. It was kind of my first real dark night of the soul of uncomfortability and emotional pain and fear, and a lot came up for me. And I tell you what, Johnny, that opening, it really cracked me open and in a most positive, glorious way. And it was the beginning of a lifelong self-exploration that became mm-hmm. my greatest passion. It just has brought me tremendous joy and has led me straight to my purpose as a soul nurturer and an author and a parent. And so I began teaching fourth and fifth grade in a mm-hmm. public school outside of Chicago, loved it, but really my greatest passion was this spiritual development, personal growth path, had my own children, and when they were 4, 7, and 8, it became very clear, like woke up one morning, mm-hmm. I'm going to take them with me. And I talked to my spouse, my partner, and he was on board, and I didn't want them to have to wait until they were 40 for a tragedy to really know who they are. Mm-hmm. So that's really, and it just kind of has all unfolded. I'm 41 now. They're 15, 14, and 11, and by no means a perfect family, but I'd say, accountable for
right.
who we are. And,
right.
and so that's kind of my story.
Interesting. Now, your journey, obviously, is a very gradual one. It sort of hit you when you were 18 and you sort of have to recompose yourself, so to speak. But the very first time that you really experienced that jolt, when was that?
Well, it was my father gave me some books at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I cried as I read them. I felt mm-hmm. just this breathless feeling. And they were books about really getting to know the voice of your own soul, not mm-hmm. through another source, but my own personal connection mm-hmm. and my intuition, seeing myself as this beautiful, infinite, creative energy being, essentially beyond just the physical form and the personality of Annie. And for me, and I only share, from my perspective and experience,
yeah.
Johnny, I'm a fellow parent, friend, spiritual journeyman, not as an expert in such intimate topics. But I just, it moved me. That's really the only thing
mm-hmm.
I can say. And I felt opened. And it just, ever since then, it's just been my greatest passion to kind of move through my own interior. In the beginning,
mm-hmm.
it was more the excitement of, that spiritual type of path that was so personal and direct connection.
Mm-hmm.
Then, frankly, several years ago, it became the shadow work, the inner work through my own
yeah.
psyche, the hidden things, and boy, there's a lot of juice there. Now I like uncovering that. It's quite fun. I nailed another one, something that's held me back, a hidden belief about myself or the world. So, you know, it's ongoing, no finish line. Mm-hmm. I'll be the first to say, boy, oh boy, you know, show me something else. There's more work to be done. Yeah.
Were your father a spiritual person?
You know, I you know, we went to church. I grew up Episcopal. My husband grew up Catholic, and certainly honor those religions and what they offer, especially those mystical origins. But no, we were not an overly spiritual family by any means. The one thing which I do mention in my book, which is, I think, a basis for this for me, we were a very open family. My parents were young, and we felt comfortable discussing anything, you know, at the dinner table, just random long talks on a Saturday. Both of my parents were like that, so I think that really meshed well with this kind of soul-to-soul connection. Nothing was off-limits at a very young age, so that's appropriate here, I think.
Very interesting. What is the root of soul-to-soul parenting?
You know, for me, it's really a connection to that larger perspective of who we really are. So it's not really parent to child, it's soul to soul. It's not just the role to role. It's not really neighbor to neighbor. If you allow it to be, if you see it and feel it, hopefully as more as time goes on and this becomes more integrated, it's soul to soul. It's not cashier to customer, soul to soul. Lawyer to client, soul to soul. Doctor to patient, if you really look at all the different roles. And yes, the roles are there. I'm a real and both gal, and we are beautiful, eternal beings interacting with one another in a much deeper and profound way than we often realize. And so in the midst of everyday modern life, of course, you know, you're not in that space of oneness all the time, and yet once you glimpse it, you can always stay connected to it, even intellectually, so that your interactions might be of a little bit of a higher nature, and that there's more compassion. There's more capacity to see that multiple perspectives share the same space. There's more opportunity for love and heart-to-heart that might suit some people better. And so it's that larger perspective. The larger out, the further out you can go, we always work with our children on this, the greater the possibility for less suffering and more joy and understanding.
Very true. In reading your book, what I gather from it, it is a truly spiritual book, and it's not religious in nature, obviously, and you speak the universal language, and that is important. And basically, you can pretty much select things that you suggested in your book and custom tailor it to your family needs, so to speak. So why did you decide to write soul-to-soul parenting?
You know, again, it was I really listened to that voice in my own soul, and I was out on a walk one day, and it just, you know, it just became clear. Write a book, and the title came to me clear as a bell. But I had been a stay-at-home mom, and just the soul-to-soul parenting is simply what we began doing in our own family. And I was a stay-at-home mom, and a friend of mine, out of the blue, quote-unquote, said, Annie, we need a speaker at this women's forum. Would you do it and talk about what you're doing in your family? And Johnny, oh, I thought, oh my gosh, me? I don't know, you know, and really? And I went home, and you know what? I knew I would say yes. It was that inner yes. There was the cells in my body where you could feel the excitement, which is what we work with our kids a lot, getting quiet and feeling the direction. Does it feel dense, heavy, anxiety-ridden? Does it feel light, joyous, enthusiastic? So anyway, I used the same thing with me, and I said yes. And 6 weeks later, I was speaking in front of 40 people. I made up business cards and called myself a soul nurturer because it just feels right to me. And from that talk, other talks. From that talk, women saying, I love the family stuff, but let's do some workshops for my own personal development. And I said, okay, you know, so it's been very grassroots. And then 3 years later is when the book came. The book was not originally there, but, you know, there were just so many things that we were doing. People showed interest in it, and I thought, let's go for it.
What's interesting you just mentioned is that as you teach, you became a student yourself.
Oh, yeah. That's that's the to me, this is all the peace and the paradox. Yes, everything for me and both teacher, student, student, teacher. I always say when I facilitate my workshops, mutually beneficial. This is as much for me as for them, and I'm, you know, there's just no differentiation really, except I'm in the role of facilitator at this point in time, but I truly feel that.
Very interesting. What are the attributes of a spiritually conscious family?
Well, to me, you know, again, each family is its unique vortex and has its own dynamic. So for us, I would say a family who is conscious of thought, word, belief, priority, and sees ourselves as shaping and creating our own external reality. A family who begins to at least attempt to use the outside world and illnesses as cues as to where we can look in our own beautiful interior to grow and expand. So the motto would be more grow is me rather than woe is me. A family that looks not to see itself as victims, but really much more responsible for all that occurs in our world. A family that sees the body as a sacred vessel, both as a navigational system to feel our way and an expression of spirit. That's really the vehicle in which I have felt my most ecstatic moments. It's through the body, so not really transcending the body, but utilizing the body. And finally, because I could go on and on, as you know, but really look to that multiple perspective piece, sharing the same space. So it's not so much I'm right, you're wrong, my way, the only way. Much more, let's dissect and see where truths can blend and overlap, because everyone has a right to their own perspective.
Right.
So that's just a bit of what I would say attributes are.
Interesting. You and your husband obviously came together and agreed on certain fundamentals before you, I guess, introduce it to your children. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And that, to me, is the core or the starting point of anything you want to do within the realms of the family.
Yes, very much so. And yet, this model is, I am just an all-inclusive gal. I truly am. I would never want to leave anyone out of the equation. So, there's single parents. And to me, it's the spiritual journey is one through your own interior. So you can simply, if everyone in the family is not on board, you can simply model what it looks like to become more whole within yourself. And that alone is 90% of soul-to-soul parenting, that one of the parents commits to this path of self-exploration and opening and offers it even in very, very small one-on-one ways if needed. If you have a partner such as I do, my beloved husband, Jim, who's open and willing, then that's a lovely thing. But I want to say, you know, my husband's an AP biology high school teacher, and, you know, science and spirituality are merging more and more, and that's exciting. But this is not his greatest passion as it is mine. He's a varsity high school soccer coach. He's very earthy in his approach. So, you know, we'll do a family discussion, and I get a little bit more esoteric, and he'll just say, all right, kids, I'm bringing it home. You're on the soccer field, okay? And these real-life metaphors are just his greatest offering, and I love it. And he agreed, you know, Annie, this is your passion. I'm open.
Right.
I'm willing. I'm going to let you kind of lead the way, and I'll be there as the support.
Right.
And so that's how it works for us. And most of my clients, there's usually one of the parents is a little bit more interested and passionate, and really what you ask of the other, would it be okay if I begin this, and will you support me in it? And if you get a yes for that, then that's enough, you know. Yeah.
That's very good, because you answered the question, the journey begins with you first.
Yes.
And that's the essence of everything and how you want to start this journey. Then you incorporate everything with the family. Your book talks about soul-to-soul parenting vehicles. What are some of those vehicles?
Well, and that's the kind of the practical, bring it on home, the Central Street part of the book that I, you know, like, how is it done, Annie? You know, these themes are great. But One of them is the family discussion, and that was the first thing for us once a week years ago when they were young. As I said, 4, 7, 8, we committed to one day a week. We use Sundays of sitting down together and really purposefully introducing slowly but surely. I mean, maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes, what factoring yourself in means. We might read a children's book, not necessarily a spiritual one, everyday life, everyday mediums. If you had watched a Disney movie together as a family the day before, pull the theme right on out. Maybe there's a favorite song that you're listening to with the family. Use it, and you kind of start to pull a theme out of it, one of these universal life themes. So family discussion was super important for us in the beginning because it really lays the groundwork. So that on a Tuesday then, you know, when a child gets off a bus or comes home from school and there's something has occurred with a friendship or a teacher, you have a bit of a language to use, you've laid down some themes and ideas to pull from. So that would be, I would think, the first one. And it does not have to add a ton to your plate. I know we're a busy modern family with sports and music lessons and horseback or you name it. We're doing it too. It's just kind of a shift in where you place your focus. So that would be one of them. And then another one that directly attaches to that are visual cues. Mm-hmm. I've been on this path since I was 19, and, you know, something resonates. But for me, it's the integration of it so that it becomes a felt reality. That's really where the power is. So our kitchen cabinet, for example, two of highly used cabinets have visual cues, soul-to-soul reminders of things that we discussed in the family discussion. Mm-hmm. So it might be, take a conscious breath, soul-to-soul, we're all one, or whatever it is. And I'm a former fourth grade teacher, so it's on bright yellow paper with a little laminating machine that I love. You know, we have 30, and you can interchange those.
Right.
And just examples to really announce to your family, to the universe, like, we're going for it. You know, this isn't just something we talk about once and then never come back to. You circle back again and again.
Right. Very interesting. It's basically a message board as a reminder of what
you have. Yes, yeah. And do it, you know, if you have a big bulletin board on your way to a highly used the basement or whatever it is. I just offer, again, these like little ideas. Mm-hmm. But, you know, email me. Tell me where you're putting them. I'd love to know. bathroom mirrors, desktops, whatever. Mm-hmm. Our car is a spirit mobile, and we have little messages on the glove compartment, and a few messages on the outside too, like a cool oneness bumper sticker and coexist. You know, it's just kind of our quirky thing.
Right. Very interesting. One of the things that I would like you to talk a little bit more about is family rituals. The reason why I bring this up is because I feel like that really kind of put the family together in terms of doing things together. And there's synergy there, tremendous amount of synergy.
Yes, it is. It gets everyone on board. I'll name a couple. We rewrote our family grace because it was just one that Jim and I had said when we all through it growing up. And, you know, it's a nice grace, but it really didn't quite fit our kind of evolving spiritual beliefs. So we've got our own special one, and that was posted on the kitchen cabinets for a while. It's not anymore. Because we all know it. But, you know, change things up. You can do something like that. Or before our children, for years before they left to school, play dates, and often I still do it today, but would have a spiritual, like, just expect the best today. Mm-hmm. Remember to factor yourself in today. Listen to your body today. Trust those vibes. You know, and you can do it in a funny way. It's not all serious. You can dance it out and say it's them. There's a lot of joy in this, and there's a bit of looseness as far as rigid perspectives. Not that the parents are not in charge, because of course they are. This is not a free-for-all family unit. But I do think that we could all hum a bit more, laugh a bit more, you know, dance around the house a little bit more, and just loosen the grip of kind of getting stuck and, you know, things have to be one way within the family.
Right. And the difference, too, between the visual cue and what I figured with regards to family rituals is that the visual cues can be a personalized message for yourself, but the family rituals tie everyone's together.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Although we've really, the visual cues used to be just for me years and years and years ago, but part of waking up to really infusing daily consciousness, we'll call it, into the family was making it for everybody.
Right.
So a lot of the things that I used to do for myself, that was kind of the awakening, like, wait, wow, even though they're 4, 7, and 8, they can be a part of this daily.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the light bulb for me. Instead of a lot of the parents maybe listening are on their own journey, and maybe they love
right.
Eckhart Tolle, or they've, you know, they're reading a lot of books that are exciting them. My thing is then pull in a simple, digestible way, a theme out mm-hmm. of the book that you're reading once a week and offer it.
Right.
So, and, you know, we have a special bookshelf with all the books that have touched us. We have a mm-hmm. family altar. You can do blessing bowls once a week, or
mm-hmm.
prayer boxes, or a lot of ideas like that that you can incorporate mm-hmm. family ritual into.
Right. And that's the reason why it's very interesting, because there is a we time and then there's a me time. And
yes.
the we time is very, very important, because ultimately that's what the concept is all about, is to bring the family members together on a common goal, or certain things that are common for everyone to understand and holds up from that
yes.
perspective.
Very much so. And that's really laying the groundwork
mm-hmm.
and being very open with, I just gave a talk recently and that parents said, I guess I just didn't realize, you know, how much I'm getting out of my self-exploration path and how much more I can bring it into the home.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if you have an ailment, you know, I personally have gone through many different bodily things and really share with my kids the different layers of healing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you know, at dinner I might say, I went to, you know, the traditional doctor today and they looked at that broken wrist, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome. They're going to set it. And I journaled, and you hold up your wrist, where I'm not flexible in my own
mm-hmm.
life, where I, you know, really, we do a lot of work on the double layers there. You can stay on that physical layer, or you can move in the energetic, metaphorical layer where true
mm-hmm.
healing can occur. And I'll say, you know, I went to my medical intuitive today after, you know, to get a little
mm-hmm.
bit more insight on that wrist and
mm-hmm.
what were the life themes that that wrist is trying to help me work on. So that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, bring it on home. Don't
mm-hmm.
just do it perhaps and think, oh, my kids aren't ready for that. They are ready, is what my experience has been.
Well, it's like eating. They will only chew what they can swallow. And
yes.
that's okay.
Yes.
And that's quite okay.
They're on, you know, my kids, 15, 14, 11 now, two
mm-hmm.
girls, my teenagers and boy. And believe you me, I mean, I get the eye rolls. They're moving into their independence. And I'm thrilled for that.
Right.
The one thing that I do feel, and it's yet to unfold, but when they are 25, I feel that this will be the best of what we offer them, even
right.
beyond all the academics and extracurriculars. But the opportunity to be comfortable within their own skin and to know themselves
mm-hmm.
As more than simply a physical body and a personality, you know, and what that inner compass creates for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the goal, you know, an opening for them to self-realize, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Another vehicle that you talk about is the Intuitive Gratitude Journal. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes. You know, I started that years ago, and I suggest it to many of my clients, and bar none for me and many of them, this was the fastest means to solidify that you were actually an incredibly intuitive being who many synchronicities occur throughout the day and much more psychic, quite frankly, than ever realized.
Mm-hmm.
And, for, you know, a lot of people have kept gratitude journals. And for me, gratitude is a very high vibration that can be felt in the body and very important to see it that way, feeling it. So gratitude goes with every entry. But the intuitive part of the journal is literally beginning to record, even commit to 1 month keeping an intuitive gratitude journal, where every time you've thought of something and then, oops, there it occurs. You know, you've thought of someone and they called.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you were walking down the street and you had an idea. The texture of it felt different. Write it down. And I would literally, it became just a highlight of my day. It's a quick, you date the entries. I carried it around with me everywhere. And I'd have 40 or 50 entries in a day. It was unbelievable, just this opening of who I really was
mm-hmm.
and to listen for that interior voice of the soul and be willing and invite it in. It was amazing. And so that really, for me, was a big part of that initial aspect
mm-hmm.
of my journey. And, you know, my kids have journals. They've never taken it to the level that I've taken it. They see me writing in mind all the time. And mm-hmm. Or if I have an issue in the outside world, they know that that's the first place I'll start within the flow mm-hmm. of my own consciousness. What am I missing here? Mm-hmm. What within myself perhaps needs to be healed? Why has that pushed mm-hmm. my button? And so mm-hmm. even just witnessing you, you know, doing inner work in that way, I think is really powerful.
Very interesting. You also incorporate meditation as an integral part of your routine. So how does that work?
You know, I'm a big meditation does not have to look one way. I have taken formal meditation classes, and I think it can be a wonderful avenue. Sometimes I meditate in that more formal way that people might be picturing. But more often than not, we have a big, you know, swing on the oak tree out in our yard that creates a beautiful arc. I'll just sit out there for 20 minutes by myself and swing, just purposely getting quiet, or I'll pull up from a big grocery run and sit in my car an extra 5 minutes and breathe deeply mm-hmm. and center myself. Certainly, if I'm going through an issue where I feel anxious or doubtful, I'll go up to the formal chair and meditate to quiet mm-hmm. the mind. But really, I use it just as a beautiful tool. More when I'm feeling off center, you get to know yourself well enough that I can tell when I'm feeling not as connected to my source, to my soul, to the
yeah.
greater all that is. So I meditation is a fabulous tool. But active meditation, I walk, I bike. I typically do that alone. I think of that as sacred time with my spirit. I prefer that than walking with friends and chatting. I have other times where I do that. So kind of look at soul time as an important part of the day.
And it's a me time, because I do it quite a bit. I mean, one of the things that I'm doing now is I've been doing this for about over a year now. I walk in the evenings, and I'm up to 9 miles when I go out and walk. And I have my iPod on, and I could have gone 10 or 11 or 12. Of course, after 2 hours, close to 3 hours, you just figure that it's time to stop. But you're right, because you're as one with nature and with you yourself, and you find that peace, that connection, that sense of relaxation from within. Very powerful.
Yes, and in the busy world, it's something that we stress in our own home by modeling it, by inviting and encouraging children to take their time, and not just once a week, really more daily, and everyone's busy. So to me, that's not really enough of an excuse. You know, if you work, you could sit during lunchtime quietly versus always having to go out to lunch and be with other people.
Very true. One of the things you talk about in your book, which is interesting, you mentioned briefly a little bit about it, prayer boxes, vision board, and blessing bowls. I want us to talk a little bit about that, because I think that's very interesting, because this is, again, tying into your perspective of meditation, law of attraction, combination in terms of your intuitiveness of wanting certain things and basically envisioning it coming to you as a blessing.
Yes. You know, I'm real big on being an active participant in mm-hmm. my own life, whether it's initiating self-healing, whether it's with my book, visualizing it being picked up overseas in different places by placing a world map on one of those kitchen cabinets, mm-hmm. and really helping our children to see, too, that the energy that they put towards creating their own reality really matters, their thoughts, mm-hmm. their words, their deeds, their priorities. And it's really up to them, and helping them to really see that and utilize it. So vision boards in and of themselves have no power, but to take the time as a family to sit and create and cut from different magazines and voice, you know, speak it, I would love this to occur. And then talk about ways that it might, and plop it up in a place that's not hidden in the family, but that you're proud of it, you know, for all to see. That's who the Burnsides are. That's who we are, to do a personal one or a prayer box. We created this box from an art store, and you can put your prayers in it. And it's just amazing. You know, maybe you'll go through it 2 months later at a family discussion, or 6 months later. There's no, you know, this isn't a linear thing necessarily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just you pull it out, and you have one of the kids read, and oh my goodness, just what has occurred. Or just, we always talk about, you know, gratitude. Thank you for opening the space for this to possibly occur. Or the blessing bowl, same thing. Just, and we've talked about the vibration of gratitude, and that's on us to feel it. You know, it's a lot more is on us than a lot of people are taught, I think. So, you know, those are just examples of how you can infuse it in. And even seeing a blessing bowl sitting on a table in your dining room or living room, it's just that the reminder, the cue that this matters. I am so much more than I think I am when I get caught up in the daily grind.
What do you do with all the blessings once you have already achieved them?
Well, I mean, you could let a bowl fill, you could save them in a bag for later, or you can just offer them up, say thank you, and recycle them. You know, it depends on what the family wants to do. Some families keep these beautiful marble, we're big marble people too, I just think they're so pretty, and they're circular, and a marble jar, you know, anything that suits you. Really the idea is, for me in writing the book, was just to get the creative juices flowing. Like, what are just a few more things, you know, that we could do? Mm-hmm. We have personal altars. We have a family altar. And an altar of gratitude for being consciously spirit embodied, really, for us, is what it is.
Very interesting. How do music and movies facilitate the connection between you and your children?
Oh, Johnny, I cannot say enough about using physical reality that kids are already interested in. I'll give you an example. You know, we watch American Idol together. We find it quite inspiring, you know. And one of the winners, Lita Wise, wrote a song called Sweet Serendipity a while back, and we loved it. So we did a family discussion on it, and that was the opening to talk about a serendipity, what it might feel like, and to be on the lookout for those and to be open. Or synchronicity, and we share different examples, ask them if they had ever felt one or what it might be for them. And then we listen to the song again, you maybe dance a little bit. You know, it's meant to be fun. Or movies. I mean, that's where we find a lot of themes. If you've watched Avatar together or Forrest Gump or pretty much almost any movie, you can pull some type of a theme to discuss for 8 minutes, you know. And music is a real gateway for me. I've had a lot of transcendental music experiences that just, I'm very moved by me. It really, music. So we have a lot of music in our home. I'll say to my kids, if I'm feeling a little off or flat, you know what, I'm going to head on up to dance for a few minutes in my room. I need to open up the channels. And, you know, they'll roll their eyes or laugh, but they know what that means. You know, it's up to me to open those channels and get that connection going again and energy moving. So,
one of the three things that you talk about is intimacy and nature. Why is intimacy and nature important in fortifying the spiritual consciousness?
Well, I think that we live in a really busy world. So we might think that we're being intimate with loved ones, but are we really looking them in the eye? Are we really expressing love and that heart-to-heart connection as often as we could be, as we get caught up in kind of the external world? So intimacy, I think, is very, very important. And if you do have a partner, really allowing children to see that connection and the love. And also, to me, that goes along with showing anger and speaking your truth. And I think kids really need to see that emotions have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it truly is okay. We work a lot with our kids. You don't want to hold on to it. You want to get it out of your body and vibrations so that doesn't get stuck there to be looked at 20 years later, perhaps, as you know, an ailment in the body. So I think that's important. And the nature, I just don't think there is a bigger gateway, as my personal feeling, the ecstatic moments that I've felt of oneness, merging with self-love deep in my interior, have often occurred in nature. And so I think no matter, even if you live in a city, we're just north of Chicago, but moments at the lake, Michigan, wherever it is for you, it's part of our daily, weekly life to include nature.
How interesting. You have shared several spiritual themes in your book. What are some of the universal spiritual themes that you can tell us about?
Well, the first one, the soul to soul versus role to role, that's to me really the crux of it all. And that, you know, I felt that very consciously several years ago out on a walk when I was walking, and I happened to look over a lawn care worker, and from all outside appearances, we may have seemed to be very different, but Johnny, something spontaneously opened up for me that day, and as I observed him, I stopped dead in my tracks, and I went into this ecstatic space of oneness with energy moving up and down my body, my scalp just tingling with love, tears in my eyes, a really breathless, ecstatic feeling. And it lasted for several moments, and he didn't even see me. I was just observing him and the oneness. It was overwhelming. And since then, I've fallen into that spontaneously quite often in the grocery store with the moment with the bagger. Driving my car and watching two boys walk down the street, it just overtakes me, that same feeling. And so once that's been glimpsed, that soul-to-soul versus roll-to-roll, once it's felt, there's really, in my opinion, no going back from that. And that's really one of the big things I wanted for my children, at least in children, you know, are teachers, quite frankly. But what occurs as they grow older is they get covered up with psychic debris, we'll call it. You know, we all have it. And I'd love for my children and the children of the world to be off and running with their gifts as early as possible without having to wade through the psychic debris that I've had to and perhaps you've had to. I think that's how we're going to change the world. But anyway, so that soul-to-soul versus roll-to-roll, and I practiced it after that, literally, and we've had the family practice it, made a chart on the desk in the kitchen, soul-to-soul versus roll-to-roll, and this is how you really bring it home, and we'd make a notch every day. Like, are we willing to go out and at least attempt to see that roofer, the barista at Starbucks, in a larger perspective, even if her attitude is snarky? Even if, no matter what, can we see beyond it? So that was one of the biggest themes, and that's just ongoing, you know. And what we find is, even if, I think I mentioned earlier, you can't feel the oneness in the moment when someone is cutting you off in traffic or you're having an issue with someone, what begins to occur is you can connect even intellectually to it because you felt it before, you have an understanding, and that alone is enough to raise the interaction even just a little bit. But hopefully you begin to feel it in your body.
Very interesting. What you're talking about as well is the fact that you have to be present in the present moment and then just not be judgmental versus rather just sitting there and observing.
Yes.
And making that soul connection and seeing the other person for who they are.
Yes. I'm glad that you brought up non-judgment because, you know, all the masters talk about it. And I always wondered, well, how do you get there? But from my experience and perspective on this path, and again, my work is not done like anyone else's, more to uncover. But I will say I've understood more how that non-judgment comes in, because when you begin to see and feel yourself as an eternal, infinite being, and then you are able to see others in that way, you really realize you can't actually ever be harmed. You can perceive yourself to be harmed. But I know that no one ultimately could kill or harm me because I'm eternal, and I felt that in my deepest space. So there comes in more of a neutrality about, you know, it's not necessarily you live to be 80, you live to be 40, you live to be 10. There's more of a neutrality on that. From the human perspective, quite tragic, but simultaneously you're able to feel the larger soul perspective at the same time, and that's where the joy has come in for me. That's the peace and the paradox. I feel it simultaneously. I'm and both. I'm human and I'm spirit. And as those merge in your daily reality, it creates a space for non-judgment.
Very interesting. Can you explain to us the nature of connectedness and boundaries as a spiritual theme?
Yes. You know, it's very important, I think, as you go down this path, you begin to feel the oneness, and it's powerful, and it's intoxicating, and it's ecstatic. And yet, it's interesting. It also has to do with self-love, that when we've individuated into a physical body, and that we have a right to factor ourselves in. We have a right to boundaries. We have a right to say no when we feel a red flag. We have a right to say yes when we feel a green flag. So for me, It's this interesting place deep in my own interior where self-love merges with oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just about, oh, well, I'm one with everyone, so I am a doormat. It's actually self-love grows. There is this feeling of sacredness that of being in this incarnation and how beautiful it is and how responsible I want to be with it. So my self-love has grown as the oneness has grown paradoxically.
Mm-hmm.
So we do talk a lot about protecting yourself, and they absolutely have a right to their perspectives. And, of course, they hopefully are open and kind, but they have a right to speak and be their truth. And we work on that a lot because that's something I've had to work on in my own life a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you also talk about forgiveness as well. How does this contribute to one's spiritual well-being?
Well, ultimately, it is my core belief, and I only share Annie-ness here, but there's only one of us in the room. So, you know, there actually would be no need to forgive, but in the physical reality and the dimension in which we live, forgiveness is extremely important, really, to free the person who is feeling wronged.
Mm-hmm.
So the work is really our work to forgive, to liberate ourselves, our bodies, our psyches from being attached to what we perceive to be a very negative circumstance. So I offer a couple forgiveness exercises in the book. I'm not saying it's an easy thing, but I think, again, being accountable for what lurks in our psyche to go for it. Well, then if we need some forgiving, then let's work on it consciously, openly, and help your children to do that. One of the worst things I think from a human perspective is getting stuck in a pattern that really is detrimental to you spiritually, emotionally, and physically.
Very interesting. How does kinship comes into play as a theme?
Well, kinship, it's kind of interesting. I think, you know, in my heart of hearts, I feel like we are all ultimately kin,
mm-hmm.
as the human species and the animals and plants too, quite frankly. But, you know, I think that there are those that you really feel a strong connection to. Maybe there's just that similarity in perspective, or you can't even explain it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a palpable soul-to-soul connection. And
soul
I think
sisters, I think, huh?
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's important to surround yourself with those whom you can really be comfortable within your own skin.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know yourself better and love yourself more and more, you know, you want to choose to be around people that help you to feel open and uplifted and joyous and more than those who might make you feel diminished in some
mm-hmm.
way, and you have a right to choose that. So I just brought up kinship in the book to really seek that out, and it is your birthright to
mm-hmm.
choose to be around people that make you feel that way.
Well, there is a saying that you can't choose who your relatives are, but you can certainly choose who your friends are.
Yes, very much so. Very true. And a lot of people's family relationships are their toughest, and they're their best teachers. You know,
mm-hmm.
so we look at it as a negative thing, but the ones closest to us that we're working with, we're actually looking to heal aspects of ourselves. That's my perspective. So
mm-hmm.
you bless them. You know, it's and if you have to love from a little bit further away or spend 4 hours Thanksgiving instead of Thanksgiving weekend, then make those choices that are appropriate for you from a self-loving perspective. But, yeah, it's very hard to let loose of family members. You know, because they're part of the fabric of what we're here to do.
Right, right. One of the things that I like very much is that you talk about gratitude and appreciation as a spiritual theme. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, in those moments that of oneness and self-love and a drop to my knees in gratitude, the feeling, that soul-to-soul feeling, the oneness feeling, gratitude is very, very much a part of what that has been for me. And so more than just teaching children, it's polite to say thank you because you should. I'm
mm-hmm.
much more interested in my children being able to feel gratitude in the cells of their body, whether they're in nature and they
mm-hmm.
take the time to witness the beautiful cardinal, or they've just spent some lovely time with someone, to feel the power and the gratitude for what it means to be in this body for as long as we're in this body. It is such a gift. So gratitude also, I think, when you're looking to create things in your life, we work with our kids on the optimal space being appreciation for exactly where you are, whatever is occurring, coupled with enthusiasm for the future. That kind of that point where those two things cross, to me, is a very powerful creative energy. Because you can't fight reality. You are where you are. And no matter whether you're in illness or whatever's going on, it offers its own gifts. You might have to dig deep to dig them out. But it's where you are in the moment. You can't change that. So tremendous gratitude coupled with enthusiasm to change things if so desired.
Very good. How can parents get started down this path of enlightenment?
You know, I think the beautiful thing about 2012 is that it's becoming more and more apparent that enlightenment and self-realization is not for but a few masters in our history. It's not for but a few monks on a mountaintop in India. It's possible for every single one of us. It's what's being called forth in every single one of us in our own backyards, at the grocery store, at your son's baseball game, at your daughter's music recital or soccer game. It's right here, right now, in our own homes. So I just feel that to even commit or be open to exploring your own interior and the beauty that you will find there is to me what the path is all about. And even if one parent does that and you don't do one activity from the book, you don't do one family discussion, that alone is enough to shift the energy in the family, that one person is willing to go to the depths of their own soul. To me, that really opens the door for all.
We talk a lot about parents. How can children benefit from soul-to-soul parenting?
Well, I think it's just, you know, they're on their ongoing journey just like the parents. I do not believe in forcing it down people's throats. I've just simply been much more open about the joy of my path and what I've uncovered in my own interior, the different life themes, and offered it through the means through the book. As they've gotten older, it's more clear. You know, we've laid a lot of groundwork, but now truly it's up to them to carry it forth in their own life if they desire to do so. And they may not, you know, I have no idea. I look in their eyes as they witness how we do things, and I feel that we've done what we were here to do with our children, but who knows? You know, my hope would be that they would take the soul-to-soul perspective, and then whatever their life, however it unfolds, if they're a physical therapist, there might just be that sense of soul-to-soul. If they're a musician, if they're a teacher, if they're a plumber, it doesn't matter what they're doing, but who they are while they're doing it, and what they emanate outward and upward is to me what I would love to see. It's up to them, you know.
Interesting. What are some of the general tips that you can offer other parents to lay out some groundwork?
You know, I love just quick tips here. I utilize everyday life. This is not about, you know, having to pull things from some esoteric books. Use nature, friendship, meal times, movies as the perfect curriculum and forum to teach your children powerful universal principles such as self-love, presence, oneness. Teach your children to allow multiple perspectives in all life situations and relationships by flipping challenges into positive learning opportunities. Anything can be flipped. There are gifts, from my perspective, in every single universal aspect of humanity. You know, I do soul-to-soul circles, and you look around. We went around one day. One person was grieving a mother that passed way too young. Another was going through lymphoma, sitting at the table with no hair. I, at the time, had a very debilitating back issue and could barely walk people to the front door. Another was going through a difficult divorce. So, you know, we're here in a human body, and there will be all kinds of universal human challenges. But can we grow from them? And can we see them at the possibility, the transformation that they really offer us? So I would say that. I would say train your children to be more conscious of thought, word, and deed so they can assume greater responsibility for the creation of their own reality. A couple more: encourage compassion and empathy in your children on a daily basis by making them very used words in your home. And finally, turn the joy in family life way up by singing, dancing, humming, laughing, and relaxing rigid perspectives as often as possible through openness and gratitude at just being alive. There are many, many ways to do something. You know, when you feel that eternal perspective, get to a stop sign, there's not just one right turn.
Very interesting. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Thank you, Johnny. Annie Burnside, AnnieBurnside.com, or soultosoulparenting.com, no hyphens, and the Soul to Soul take you to the same website. There's a lot there. I'm very active on Facebook. It's a great soul pod on Facebook. I find it a thrilling and inspiring vehicle if, balanced, used in a balanced way. Twitter, all those places, I love to hear from people. Friend me. I do have a page, follow that, or friend me. I love that mutual dialoguing. So I'd be very open to that. But my site can take, I blog for the Chicago Tribune, and all that's on the site.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. How has writing soul-to-soul parenting impacted you personally?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've grown so much. You know, I the whole book poured out of me, and I mm-hmm. honestly didn't really know what a book proposal was or how to go about finding an agent. Mm-hmm. So it took 9 months and lots of rejections, and then finally the perfect agent, and then 11 more months, and then a wonderful publisher. So for me, I mean, I'm growing right along with my children. It's all very simultaneously, and being out publicly more, speaking to someone as gracious as you to have me on, it's a pure pleasure and an honor, quite frankly, to have a forum to share Anniness, to share perspective. It really is.
It's an honor to have you on. You have some wonderful information, and this is just terrific for Mother's Day. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yes. You know, I just say, if anything's resonated that we've talked about here today, to me, mm-hmm. everything to gain and nothing to lose, to create the space and the opportunity to know yourself more mm-hmm. deeply. To me, greater intimacy with our own soul will change not only our own lives, but the lives of those that we love and the world at large, in an uplifting type of way. So, you know, I just say take the time for some soul time. And there's a lot of assistance out there as well. You do not have to go it alone. There are many, many, many people around the globe right now offering, we'll call it spiritual companionship, but just a friendship on that deeper level where the focus is not just the material, external world, which is a wonderful place. You know, we're all in it, and I honor mm-hmm. it. But really balancing the interior with the exterior with the interior more than most do, to me would be a beautiful recipe for living, a greater balance between those two, and a validation for your own interior, which perhaps goes missing sometimes. And I'm talking daily, Johnny, not just, oh, this sounded good, and once a month, or, you know, really, really balancing those two.
A wonderful recipe for living. You're 41 years old right now. Looking back in your spiritual journey, what advances have you made within the last 10 years?
The last 10 years has been really paramount for me. You know, even 10 years ago, I thought, oh, maybe I'm kind of done. I get all this. Oh, boy. No. Lots more healing to do. I really that self-love piece mm-hmm. has really come into play. And I'd say, you know, the last 10 years is when it's really become a felt reality. So mm-hmm. now, for example, when I hear Deepak Chopra talk on the Oprah interview, it's mm-hmm. not just an intellectual resonation. I have felt his offerings deep mm-hmm. within my own being. And that's really the joy of it. Mm-hmm. And, oh, boy, the greatest ecstasy I've ever known are those moments that I've described where self-love merges with oneness. And that's what I want to shout from the Facebook mountaintop. You know, it's get there however you want, but go there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, because it is a journey, a spiritual journey, and we continually, as we are a teacher, we are continually a student as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very, yes. Very interesting. Any final thoughts about soul-to-soul parenting?
Gosh, you know, I just I want to thank all the listeners who took the time to hear me speak about it today. It's really one of my greatest passions. I just feel that that our young, they're really capable and willing and ready and able to know themselves more deeply, and it will change what they offer the world. And I think it's really, really important now. You know, in schools, you can't quite go as far as Johnny and I went today. You know, you can talk about self-esteem. You can talk about kindness. And those are wonderful, important things. I'd like to see it go even deeper. So parents are going to have to be a really strong part of this triangle of schools and student and parent. And that's just really what I'd like to say. If it resonates, just I hope you do. Go for it in your own way.
What's next for you for the remainder of this year?
You know, I have a radio show called Soul to Soul. I'm loving radio. It was new to me a year and a half ago. And then if you had told me I'd be a guest, I would have said, what are you talking about? And I'd love being a guest. And then if you'd be a host, oh, my goodness, no way. Now I've been a host for almost a year, and love that. I'm writing a second book, and I run Soul to Soul circles and speak at different workshops around the country. And I'm still, you know me, I was a stay-at-home mom, so my nest, my kids are still, you know, home. My nest is my top priority, just keeping this safe nest, a place where they feel nurtured love and where they can release their emotions. And so those are my priorities.
Wonderful. Well, Annie, thank you for the great recipe for living you had shared with us earlier, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guests will be Dr. Steve Hodges and Suzanne Schulberg. They are authors of a new book titled It's No Accident. They address a silent epidemic in America that is causing exhaustion, distress, and lingering medical problems for millions of children and their families. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Happy Mother's Day to all mothers everywhere. Annie, thank you again, and have a happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.